Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollack Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack. We are injury attorneys in our day lives and our radio lives right here. We're here for you. Telephone number 303-713-8255. You know this is a law talk show. We talk law. We don't talk politics. It's been that way from the inception. It's still that way. You can give us a call. We'll help answer your legal questions, solve your legal problems. 303-713-8255. And in the mountains, welcome again. 970-457-1009. And welcome all of our stations, KRDO, Colorado Springs, KEZZ, 94.1 FM, Steamboat Springs. On the western slope, we go north, we go south, we go east and west, all for you. Ready to go. Injury attorneys ready to help you. And guess what? We're going to talk about initially today is a little bit on the accident alert status. Do you really know what to do when you hear, well, it's on accident alert, and it could be today. It could be any time, but accident alert, what do you do? I mean, you have an accident, and, you know, usually nobody can get there. You call 911. They tell you you're on accident alert, can't call the police. What are the criteria? What are the times that you have to insist on certain things and then give up on certain things when you're on, quote, accident alert, end quote? One of the biggest ones is if you've been injured, you need to insist on the police coming. You need to tell 911 that you've been injured, or somebody needs to tell them for you. And they still may not get there or can't get there. You may need immediate medical attention. So the first priority for you is to seek medical attention. The priority also is to request, demand the police come to the scene. And if they're not going to come, then you need to document it yourself. So if you've been injured, it's a different situation. And they might even ask you, is anybody injured? Yes, no. If no, then nobody's going to come. If yes, then maybe they're going to come, but it's going to be a long time. You might need to get to the hospital. That's your first priority. But let's talk about some other things. Brad, what about if the other driver is drunk or impaired on drugs? We say, we've covered shows, impaired on prescription drugs, impaired on marijuana, impaired by alcohol, impaired by some reason, then you've got to insist on certain things to do.
Yeah, at that point, you have to make sure you, when you're calling 911, that you're telling them you think the person's impaired. Now, a lot of times you're calling before you even get to the person, before you even get to talk to the person. So, you know, you may have to be calling 911 back saying, wait a minute, you just told me you're on accident alert. It's going to take a while for people to get there. But this is a place where I have somebody who's intoxicated, and we need to have somebody out here right away. The police would normally will turn their attention and give their resources to that situation.
And the other thing is you need to understand that you can recall 911. Suppose you call 911, you report the accident, they tell you, okay, it's accident alert, and then you find out this other driver's been drinking. You can call 911 back. You can give them a second call. Just make sure that you've got legitimate grounds to do so, but you can do it. The other thing that you can do, if it's on accident alert status and you call 911, those phone calls are being taped and recorded. So you can give as much details, as many details as you can about the accident to the 911 caller. How about that? You can start documenting what's happening. If the police aren't going to come, you document what's happening by the 911 call. Also, if you've got a hit-and-run driver, you've got to call the police. You've got to call 911. You cannot let this go. Usually in very bad snowstorms, the hit-and-run drivers can't get away, but sometimes they do. And you've got to document the scene. We've done shows on this. We've got podcasts on our website, championsofthepeople.com. You've got to document. I guess the overriding theme, Brad, is when you're on accident alert, if nobody's going to come, you need to find the best ways you can to document the scene, witnesses, the collision, debris, pictures, etc.
And you need to get to the doctor if you're hurt. You need to get to the emergency room if you're hurt. Don't say, well, nobody came, and I'm going to go home, and I'm going to see, and I'm just going to lay around or wait or whatever. You know, if you've been hurt, get yourself the medical attention you need and you deserve. Get to the medical, some type of facility, an emergent facility. Get that taken care of. Get an encounter report filed within 24 hours. Make sure you file that counter report. When you're at the scene, make sure you take photos of everything involved in the scene. Make sure you take photos of what the cars look like and how the accidents occurred, because it's going to be important. as time goes by.
Right, and usually when an accident alert status, the traffic's moving slower, so there are witnesses. Sometimes witnesses just keep on driving in a normal dry condition, but there are witnesses close by or they can't go get around you. You need to start getting their names and information. You need to take pictures of the other person's insurance card, their license plate, their cars, the debris, the position the cars are on the street. You need to start documenting everything as much as you can at the scene. You can do it on the 911 call. You can do it at the scene. We've got cell phones with cameras these days. You can take recorded statements. I had somebody come in with a recorded statement from the at-fault driver the other day. You can do that. And as Brad said, you got to file a counter report. But what are you going to do in the counter report? You can put as much detail in the counter report as you want. And you can start documenting your case right there. So it's important that you get into this documentation phase if it's accident alert, if nobody's going to come. Because usually when you have to file a report, but when the police come, that is equivalent of you filing the report because the police are going to make a report. So you've got to make sure that you document. I keep saying that, but that's what you got to do. And there's many ways to do it. The 911 call, your camera on your phone, the report, the counter report, witnesses, witness statements, get their information, their address, phone number. I think that's one thing that you have to work on, because accident alerts creates a whole different scenario.
It sure does. It's a dangerous situation that you could be facing, because you may never be able to get back to what happened and be able to get back to verify the losses and how you've been injured.
You know, we cover in our books Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run, several of the myths. One of the myths is if you're in a hit and run, I don't really have to call the police. I can just go home and report it to the insurance company later. Well, that might work, but it probably is not going to work, because they want a police report. They want to know what's going on. All right, we're going to talk law with Robert right now. Good morning, Robert. Welcome to Bell and Pollock.
Well, you just started me thinking about a million questions. How much after the fact, if you collect all this information, say there's an accident or 911 is flooded, is your information viable? I mean, like a day or two after, say your phone's out for 2 days, or you're just isolated.
Robert, you're supposed to be making that accident alert call within 24 hours. It's a counter report, and you can get on the computer and make it. You're supposed to be making it that quickly.
That doesn't work, too. I mean, just what you've seen, like with the power outage, the number of people that were isolated, I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. And the problem is that if you can't make it anyway, get it made whenever you can, as soon as you can. Try and document and make sure you're going to be accurate about what you're documenting and what happened. If there are witnesses, you got to make sure you identify those witnesses. If you look at an accident report, it identifies witnesses, or it asks you for witnesses. It asks you for damage to the vehicles. It asks you for information concerning who's been hurt or how they were hurt or if there were injuries at all. So there's a lot that has to be got done with that.
Well, I'll tell you one other thing. It reminds me, it takes me back to my military days when they said, you know, what am I going to do? They said, you're a Navy pilot. Figure it out. Get creative. Think. Start documenting it. You didn't call us on the subject, Robert, so we got a break. If I'm put you on hold, we'll cover what you called us for in a second. Is that okay?
All right.
Good. All right. So you're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, in our radio lives. We're here for you. 303-713-8255. We were just talking about accident alert. What do you do when you're on accident alert status? You have an accident. Nobody's going to come. What do you do? Bell and Pollock will be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. This is a law talk show. We talk law here. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we are injury attorneys in our day lives. We represent all kinds of injured victims in our radio lives here. We're here for you to answer your questions on any legal subject. It doesn't have to be an injury subject. We do it all the time. 303-713-8255. And don't forget about our books. We have several books published, more coming. One is called Don't Get Hurt in the Same Accident Twice, once in the accident and again on the insurance claim. It's free. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can have it free. You can download an e-copy free, or you can get a hard copy by calling our office or contacting us. Another book, Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run, and they are cowards of the street. They hit people, kill people, maim people, and then they leave. What do you do? What kind of insurance do you need to cover yourself for those type of situations, which also is a situation where somebody hits you and they don't leave the scene, but they come up and they say, I don't have any insurance, I'm sorry, or my unfavorite one, here's my insurance card, and you check on it, and it expired 2 months ago, they didn't pay the premium. So that becomes an uninsured driver, and there's ways to solve it. We have a book on that. You can get it at our website, championsofthepeople.com. Right before the break, we were talking to Robert. You want to talk about snow shoveling laws, Robert?
No, that's really crazy. I was thinking about how many other arbitrary laws are on the books with Denver. I don't live in Denver, that are just outrageous. I mean, what are the proper excuses that you didn't get your walk shoveled? What is it, $100 after 12 hours or something?
Well, you've got 24 hours after the snow ends to get that walk shoveled if it's a residence.
Well, so you twist your back. You're back in the house. You can't get to it. What are the viable excuses? There aren't any, probably, because everyone has their own excuse. It's like my dog ate my homework, you know? I mean...
really, there aren't, because they expect you to have appropriate arrangements made.
What if you can't get out? Like, the snow just isolated everyone. You couldn't even get out of your front door.
Well, did you see the news last night? I think it was. Denver had already handed out. I think they had one inspector on. And he had already handed out over 30 notices to people. Now, they weren't charging anybody, and they weren't doing anything. And by the way, everybody has to understand, businesses have 4 hours after the snow ends to get it done. So, but they weren't charging anybody yet, but the inspector said he will be coming back if they don't have their sidewalks taken care of, and the fine could be as high as $150.
So you think they're going to hire more inspectors so they can have more revenue possibilities, or what? I mean, so your sidewalks are shoveled, but you get to the intersection where the street is, and they haven't cleared the street, so you're blocked from block to block. So every block is cleared, but you get to the intersection, which is the city's responsibility, and they haven't done their job.
Well, you're exactly right. You can have a lot of problems. I mean, you know, look what the people in Denver were complaining just this week about the fact that they decided not to plow the city streets in Denver.
Right.
And so you had that problem. But at the same time, you know, you've got inspectors out saying, hey, you haven't shoveled your sidewalks, and here's a notice. You haven't shoveled your sidewalk. If you don't get it shoveled, they give them another 24 hours after that, and if it doesn't get shoveled, then what they're going to do is they're going to come back and they're going to fine them. There are some cities, this is really a law that's enforced city by city. There are some cities who will actually hire people to come shovel your sidewalk and then tack on a $30, $40 administrative fee to get it for it, and then it ends up costing you about $100 to have your sidewalk shoveled. Now, you know,
so what if you set it up and they don't show up? I mean, is that you try to mitigate the situation by hiring someone in the case that they don't show up because they're overloaded or they've taken on too much work?
Well, put yourself in the position of a judge on that situation, and you're making that argument to a judge, or you're saying, I'm physically unable to get out and clean the sidewalks. I can't shovel. And what are you going to do as a judge? You're going to force the law? You're going to impose the fine or the penalty? Are you going to listen to the excuses? So, you know, in every statute, most every statute, so I'm going to correct that, most every statute, you have to, if you're going to give a citation or if you're going to levy a fine or whatever, you're going to have to prove that there was intent. There was intent to violate the law. Some of them are strict liability. Doesn't matter if your intent is there, but you're going to have to prove intent. And so there are mitigating circumstances, and you're bringing them up right now. I mean, couldn't get to it. Tried to get it, hired somebody, they didn't do it. You know, that's how judges handle things. That's what judges are for. That's what the process is for. But you raise an interesting legal question. You know, if you have ordinances and then state laws and then federal laws, you know, which one controls? We've talked before how the United States Constitution compares to the Colorado Constitution. Who controls what? And that's what creates this maze that you navigate, like we call the insurance maze you navigate when you're injured. It, you know, basically the same thing. And so, you know, you have very good comments. And what are the city's responsibilities? I think, Robert, Brad, I think that's where Denver adopted an approach years ago from Minnesota. I could be wrong on that, but they have the designated snow streets that the city's going to clean only certain streets to begin with, or even at the end. So
And Robert, let's talk about, and I think the city of Aurora still does this for elderly people and people with disabilities. They have what's called a Snowbusters team. And that Snowbusters team, that you contact them, and it's a volunteer program that provides snow shoveling assistance for those people. And, you know, you can volunteer to do it. I think most cities do have some kind of program. If they don't, I think you're right, Robert, you and Gary's right, that's when you're facing a judge. You say, look, I'm disabled or I'm elderly. I can't really shovel the sidewalks. I've looked for people to do it. I've tried to hire people to do it. I think if a judge is listening to that, they're going to want to hear, because we go back to every homeowner has a duty to maintain their property in a safe manner. And what they've come out with on the snow shoveling is a lot of times it's your neighbors who are turning in. They're complaining because they can't walk down the sidewalk. But other times it's just inspectors catching it. But they're saying, look, this is not safe to have snow and ice on the sidewalks. Robert, mind you, I'm not saying whether all these laws are right or wrong, but that's what the laws are aiming at.
Well, it kind of reminds me, you know, you've got the city ordinances, county ordinances passed by the governing bodies there, like the city and county of Denver, city of Boulder. You know, then the county, then you got the state laws, and then you got the federal laws. Kind of reminds me of that quote. I think it came from Mark Twain years ago. He said something like, the only time your property is not in danger is when the legislature is not in session.
Good one.
That's about right.
Yeah.
So what we're looking at is that, yeah, you're supposed to shovel it. They say, and like I said, there is actually a news blurb on it last night. They were even talking to one of the inspectors who hands out the notices. They say right now Denver's been pretty gentle about it over this snowstorm. This snowstorm, you know, really within 2 days, everything was melted off. So if they waited a day to come give you a notice, and then they waited another day to come back and check, unless you were in a very shaded area, I think it was melted off. Now, Robert, I forget, where are you right now?
He's in Boulder.
You're in Boulder?
Yeah.
I'm actually in a mobile home park, so there are no rules, and even if there are, they don't follow them.
They don't follow. You know, but let me ask you a question, and everybody, let me ask you a rhetorical question here on the air. Forget the laws. Forget the ordinances, the statute. Forget them. Throw them away for a second. What do you think, Robert? What do you think the fair thing is to do so people, like, they're going to come into a business? I mean, do they have a right to be able to expect a safe entrance, a safe sidewalk, et cetera? What do you think is fair? And people in the house, what do you think is fair? They have to do the sidewalks or not?
No, absolutely. It is fair. That's the proper thing to do, of course, and that makes common sense.
Yeah, I mean, so when you forget the laws and you try to figure out what's common sense here, what is really should be happening, kind of a balancing act in your mind. Maybe
own the business, just put the shoe on the other foot. What if you own the business? How would you like to treat your customers? What if someone fell as a result of your negligence?
And you know, Robert, they say businesses should be clearing within 4 hours or have to clear within 4 hours. I, you know, obviously when they're open, I can't imagine why a business wouldn't clear the snow.
Well, if you're a renter.
Exactly.
Well, maybe you talk about a business, so and you got to figure out what's common sense. But so you go in, and the business owner says, "Well, I'm sorry, you broke your arm on my sidewalk. Would you like to buy this coffee maker now?"
That's true.
And you know, Robert, I'm looking at Boulder right now, and the fine for a first offense is $100. The maximum fine is $1,000 and 90 days in jail. You know, and then it tells you how to report a person a sidewalk snow removal violations, where code enforcement is.
Well, you're thrown in jail, so you're doing 90 days, so it snows again, and who cleans your sidewalk while you're in jail?
That's a good point.
Yeah, well, you've got to make a deal,
you know.
This really is just...
Well, you know, the laws are, you know, they're there for a reason, or sometimes no reason, but it's kind of an interesting subject.
Are the laws voted on before they're made? Are they passed by a quorum call, or how does that work?
Oh, the legislative process to pass a law is required. Nobody can just come out and start saying, here's the law. You know, the different cities, municipalities have different ways in which they're going to pass their laws, but it's all got to go through their different councils, their city councils.
That's why we have all these things like committees, subcommittees, a subcommittee on this, a subcommittee on that, a committee on this, the committee to investigate this, that.
Now remember, as a property owner, if when you're in a multifamily property owner, property situation, other than something bigger than a fourplex, you're going to have then you're going to have the property, the agents or the people who are vested with taking care of that property. Normally, that's a management company.
Right.
It's got to get it cleared. So, you know, where you're at, you could probably make some complaints if your management company's not getting that snow off your sidewalk in front of your place, Robert.
As Mark Twain said, the only time your property's safe is when the legislature's not in session. We'll be right. We're going to take a break, okay?
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You want to know about snow removal? You want to know about legal liability? We were talking about it right now. What is the law on snow removal? What is the law if somebody gets injured and the ice is an inch thick or 2 inches thick or it's all jagged? What is the law? Do statutes have any effect? We're going to talk about it. We're Bell and Pollock. We are your champions of the people, and we'll be right back. To the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We are injury attorneys in our day lives. We've been doing it for over 30 years, helping people put their lives back together again. We have trademark protected a legal game plan. We put our 30 plus years of experience into this legal game plan, point by point for you if you've been injured, tailored to your case, your needs, what's happened to you. And I've said for years that if you have a driver that hits you that's drunk, it's a different legal game plan. If you have an impaired driver from prescription drugs, different legal game plan. If you've got somebody that injured you when they were two times the speed limit, a different game plan. If you need surgery, different game plan. Right now, joining us live is Eric from Catlins. Good morning, Eric. How are you?
Hello, Eric.
Eric, are you there? Oops, looks like we lost him. Okay, so I'm sorry about that. Eric over at Catlins, I know he's got some specials. His deck's probably not open today, but as we can see, why. Anyway, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, you can give us a call, 303-713-8255. Get a copy of any of our books for free, ebooks on our website, championsofthepeople.com. We're talking a lot with Don now. Good morning, Don. Welcome to Bell and Pollock.
Good morning.
Don, you there?
Yep.
What's going on?
I have a fence that the Jefferson County Highway Department has damaged. I went down to them, called them over not this snowstorm, but the previous one.
Right.
And they had piled it against the fence, almost to the top of the fence. I talked to them about, the fence needs repaired. Let's do something to repair it. They tell me, no, can't do it. So I called a deputy sheriff and had a deputy sheriff out to write it, asking for a ticket for trespassing, putting the snow against the fence and over the fence on my property.
What happened?
I got no ticket. I go down to see the deputy, the sheriff's office, and they tell me that, hey, look, you can sue for damage, but not the criminal trespass. And I said to him, I had been told that the easy way to solve this is to get a trespass ticket against the person doing the trespassing, and then I can get then it becomes easy to get my damage suit. And they told me, no, it didn't work. That the federal people and have a right to trespass.
Okay, when did this happen? Just recently, sir?
Yeah, it had not this storm, but the previous
storm. Previous storm, okay. So you still, you know, it's like the prosecutorial discretion. It's like the police discretion. Sometimes they're going to prosecute a case, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're going to charge somebody or write a ticket, sometimes they're not. And you really can't make them. I mean, there's been certain ways. There was a famous rape case in Arapahoe County where they filed a lawsuit to make the district attorneys file rape charges, et cetera. So it's a long storied history, but you have remedies, and you can file a governmental immunity notice with the county or whoever did this to your fence, and you can ask them and request them to pay, and you can also have civil remedies. And if you need help doing this, we can help you, because you're not without remedies, Don. It's just that it doesn't look like they're going to issue a ticket or do anything criminally.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned. It sounds like they just decided to start piling the snow up on your property against your fence.
Oh, it's gone on. When I moved in here, my fence, it was a two-lane street. And now it has gone to where it is three through lanes, two left turn lanes, and a right turn lane. And they've taken, you know, their sidewalk is within about 10 inches of the easement.
Okay.
Okay, well, it sounds like you need some help there.
Have you take photos. You got to make sure you document this.
Right.
Because
I've taken photos.
Okay.
I've taken photos. The car, it's just as sad as anything you heard. A car went through my fence, and I went down and said, all right, let's do a new fence together. And their answer back after about 3 months was, hey, we need to widen that sidewalk. Why don't you give us, it started out with 20, and then it got down to 12 and a half feet of right-of-way it took for us to put the snow. And I said, all right, I'll consider that. And they said, all right, our offer is you give us the old fence, we'll take it and build you a new fence, and that'll include the 12 and a half feet. And I said, forget it.
Well, back to your snow problem, damaging your fence. You've got a remedy. We'll be glad to help you, okay? You've got to give a governmental immunity notice under the statute. Sounds complicated. It can be.
Oh, I understand. I look at it like, hey, if I'm a federal officer, I can go on the land to make an arrest. I can go on the land to serve a summons, stuff like that. But I can't drive my car on your land and sit and eat the lunch.
No, I'm not so sure they can do any of what they're doing. If they're just piling snow on your property, damaging your property when they're doing it, the cities and the government have a responsibility to clear the roads, but that doesn't give them the right to just start dumping it on somebody else's property or to be damaging their property. That's a different story.
It's even worse than that. The incident started with me watching their snowplow truck stop and give a private snowplow company just berate him to no end because he pushed the snow out of a drive across the street onto and stacked it on their medium.
So
and then it followed on after that.
Yeah.
I'm on my back porch. I watch them. They have the community service, the Department of Corrections has a community service group come out, and they were shoveling the snow over my fence. What was left of my fence was throwing a shovel over onto my fence.
Over your fence. Okay.
At that time, there was a wreck on the street. There was two state highway patrol people that witnessed it. I called people, had them witness that.
All right. You need to take pictures. You need to document it. I think we can help you. You know, to me, it's the old goose gander rule. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. It seems to me like they don't care. They get mad at somebody if they do the snow the wrong way, but they can do it on your fence. So I'm going to put you on hold, Don. We're going to have somebody contact you. We'll give you some help here, okay?
Thank you very much for your time and service. You kind of set me along the lines of, hey, I'm not crazy. I have some way. There's some recourse that I can take if I get some help.
Well, guess what? We're going to help you on the right path, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for the call. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're here for you, 303-713-8255. Good morning, Ed. Welcome to Bell and Pollock.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to bring up in the conversation what it might mean to be a good witness. First thing, obviously, is pull over and offer help or assistance, and then make sure your contact information either gets to the police or to the victim. I was in an accident one time, and I was real thankful that someone gave me their business card, and I was, you know, kind of dazed and stunned and not thinking to go out and grab a witness. And you know, a lot of people just got back in their car and took off once they saw that the ambulance was on its way and I was being taken care of.
Well, you raised a really good point because a lot of people just keep on cooking. You're going on down the road, and it sounds like you're doing the right things. And sometimes another good point you just made was the people, the victims of the accident, sometimes aren't thinking right. They're not thinking clearly. They're foggy. They're upset. They're shocked. and they're not thinking to get a witness statement or an address or any contact information. And here's somebody who was good enough to give you a business card. That's incredibly good.
Right, and to be a good witness, you would also do some of the same things as the victim would. You would, get out of your car, take some pictures. Maybe when you get home, write down to the best of your recollection what had happened. Could you, 6 months later, if you were called to a trial, could you remember, was that a green car or a blue car? Could you stand up on the witness stand and swear under oath that that was the case? Was that a two-door or a four-door car that hit that other party? And so get out and take pictures and make sure you know what you saw.
You know, that's exactly right. And write it down, because you may be asked to recount what happened in that situation. You may not even be contacted for 3 months, 6 months, a year later. If you've left a card or if you've left your personal information about how to be contacted. So you want to try to be able to recount it as best you can in the future.
You are speaking incredible words of wisdom, because many times I call a witness in an accident, and now we're 2 years down the road, and I call them, and they really want to be helpful, and I've got their name and their number, and they don't actually remember a lot of the details you were just speaking to, Ed.
Right.
The important part about all that is that to begin with is leaving your name at the scene with somebody who can use it in the future. And the way you do that to begin with is, if you're there and the police are showing up, a lot of times they'll give you these papers. They'll hand out what are called witness statement forms for you to put all this information down and give a witness statement. It's very important that you give back at least the form with your name. If you don't have time to do anything else, put your name and address and phone number on there so they know how to reach you. If you can give a short description, give it, but always give them an ability for people to contact you and follow up with what they've seen.
Right, and I got to tell you something. That you raise an interesting subject, and Brad and I usually don't give our own personal stories, but I'm going to give you one. About almost a year ago, I was a witness to an accident. It was in the snow, run a red light, blatantly wrong. And I was on my way to court, so I decided this isn't going to happen on my watch. I'm going to stay here. I stayed there over an hour. I called the court, and when I finally got to court, I told him I was a witness to an accident, and the judge was fine with that. I was an hour and a half late for that thing, but I was not going to let that happen. I gave him my information, and it took a long time to get the police and the investigation and the ambulance and the paramedics and all that stuff done. But there's a personal example, and it fits right in with your example.
Now, also, seems to me the insurance company for the at-fault
party
would get a copy of that information from the police, one of the first things, or accident report.
Well, they do, when they got my witness statement, it was very detailed, and I did get the license plate, and I did get a description, and I did take pictures. Just exactly what you just said.
Well,
exactly.
One time, the insurance company for that at-fault party called me on the phone. I think they were trying to feel me out and see just how good a witness I was going to be. In other words, they might fight it or try to not even take it to court if they think the witness isn't going to be very good.
Exactly.
Well, that's exactly right.
Right.
And that's the important part. You've just helped to streamline and get the process completed. And that's the important part about taking care of being a witness and telling them the truth and telling them exactly what happened.
Thanks for the call, Ed.
Okay, thanks.
We appreciate it. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back. This is a Law Talk Show. We're talking law. Not politics, law. 303-713-8255. We answer your questions on any legal subject, even though we're injury attorneys in our day lives. And you know, if you come to see us, if you've been injured, we have a trademark protected legal game plan. Put our 30 plus years of experience to work for you. It's just that simple. You have a different game plan tailored to your case, your needs, your situation. And I've said it before, if you're going to have surgery as a result of an accident, different legal game plan. If you're hit by a drunk driver, different legal game plan. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Get one of our free books. You can download them, e-books right there. Or you can get a hard copy. You can call the studio right now and just ask for a hard copy of any of our books. Or you can go to our website and you can email us or you can call and we'll send you a hard copy. Pretty much that simple, pretty much that easy. So you want to pay attention to this because a legal game plan is based on our 30-plus years of experience. And every case is different. So why do we do it? Because you got to get the benefit of somebody's experience, and we're glad to do that. You know, we have a complete book out on workers' compensation. We do workers' compensation cases. It's the definitive guide in Colorado with regard to that. And so you can get that one free, too, championsofthepeople.com. Right now, joining us live is Eric from Catlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. Sorry about that, guys. We're having a little bit of trouble over here.
No problem. What's cooking over there?
Well, we're on our second week of our breakfast and lunch specials. Now, that breakfast special is that peanut butter French toast I talked about last week. Get that in the egg batter, grill it to a golden brown. It's a little crunchy, really, really good. We're going to run that for one more week for breakfast. And our lunch special is going to be our chili bowl. That's beans and chili. You get your choice of red or green. All of those are made right here in-house. We're going to top that with mixed cheese and a dollop of sour cream. Serve it with a side of a flour tortilla. That's going to be our lunch special all week. And don't forget, it's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet Monday and Friday. Every Monday and Friday from 11 to 2. It's only $7.99, and that actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. You just can't beat that. And as always, we're running bottomless mimosas for $10. Can't beat that. Sorry about the deck today. Maybe next week. But the mimosas are still flowing, so you can still come and have a good time. And don't forget, tomorrow for Easter, we're having an Easter special. We're doing a spiral ham. We're doing baked beans. We're doing hot and buttery kernel corn. We're doing sweet rolls. So come on down and check that out. That's something new we're going to do for tomorrow. Come out and see us.
Okay, Eric, you know, one thing, you've got big screen TVs down there, and the March Madness is still cooking while you're cooking.
Absolutely.
And people,
absolutely,
even though you can't go on the deck, you can watch March Madness and have a great breakfast with homemade green chili or homemade red chili, scratch made, right?
Absolutely. You got it.
Where are you located?
4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard. That's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
Wait a minute, Eric.
Yes.
It's supposed to be warm tomorrow. You mean if it's warm, I can't go out on the deck?
If it's warm tomorrow, we'll definitely have it going. Absolutely. I think the sun's supposed to peak out. So just today is only kind of be cooped up. But
is there going to be any candy for my kids there tomorrow?
Dude, we have little Easter eggs with a little wet candy inside. We do those every year. So those will be there for the kiddos. Have those as always. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's impressive that you have what I call a flexible deck policy.
All right. So I can be out on the deck with candy for my kids. And some of those rugby players might be in there who are champions in Glendale.
That's what they're coming in at about 9 o'clock again today, so we'll probably be having them for a few more Saturdays. You can come check them out as well.
I hope they leave a little bit of food for me to eat.
Those
guys eat pretty good.
Thanks, Eric.
Take care, buddy.
All right. A flexible deck policy. I kind of like that. 303-713-8255 in the mountains, 970-457-1009. We're here for you. We started off the show talking about accident alert. Brad, let's finish up a little bit on accident alert. You must document the scene. If the police are not going to come, if they're not going to interview witnesses, you need to get the witnesses. You need to take video with your phone, camera on your phone. You need to take still pictures with your camera on your phone. You need to take pictures of the cars, the debris, the intersection, the witnesses. Take a picture of their insurance card. Take a picture of their license plate. Sometimes they switch drivers. Take a picture of the people. You can. And you need to document where this happened, because if nobody's going to come later, the stories are probably going to change in some form or fashion. Or as Ed said when he called earlier, that some people tend to forget. I mean, in a year and a half, you get called, you have an accident. Yeah, I remember something about the accident. So it's important to document this, especially when you're on accident alert.
Here's the thing to remember. If you're doing accident alert, and you know, we've talked about this before, you have problems at times with injuries not really surfacing and not really realizing you're hurt until after the accident, until you go home, until other things happen. Now, when people come out, a lot of times you tell them you're not hurt and you go on your merry way, and the next day you wake up and you've got problems and they keep developing. Accident alert is kind of an admission, if you're doing accident alert, that you're not hurt. So even if that happens, and that's fine, but if later on you're feeling pain, you're feeling discomfort, you're having problems, you got to get to the doctor. And once again, if you've already filled out that accident alert form, you might see, you can get back on the internet, or if you can get back into the form, or if you can file a supplement to that form. because you want to make sure your injuries are properly documented if, in fact, you've had injuries.
So you don't always have to rely on somebody else like the police or somebody else documenting what has happened. You can do it in the 911 call. I said that at the top of the show. You don't have to just tell them there was an accident. If there's injuries, tell them. Describe what's happening. You can make a repeat call to 911. Also, when you file the counter report, if the police are not going to come, you can be detailed. You can have the pictures. You can have the statements. You can attach pictures to your report. And if they don't want to take them, then you can you can save them for when there's going to be a dispute. Because a lot of people at the scene either deny they were injured, and they might be, you got to tell the truth. But a lot of them come to us and say, I didn't feel anything at the scene. I went home, and the next morning I couldn't even get out of bed. And that's understandable. But the insurance company tries to use this against you by saying you denied you were injured. You told the police officer you weren't injured. You didn't go to the emergency room. That's part of our legal game plan. That's how we cover this stuff with you. So you can give us a call anytime. You can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. There's a button on there that you can listen to our entire show on what you're going to do with a first call to the insurance adjuster for the at-fault party, the one that's not on your side. What are you going to do? What are you going to say? How can you do it? Okay, and don't forget, coming up and following us is the Barry and Larry Show, consumer real estate show. Very professional gentlemen. Work with them if you want real estate expertise. Listen to the Consumer Real Estate Show, Barry and Larry. Okay, and go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can have any one of our books for free. A lot of questions are answered in those books. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack, our law firm is Bell and Pollack, and we are your champions of the people.